Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Good morning. It's time to get up with the Beantown battle. Sure, KD and the Nets can score, but how can they slow down Jason Tatum and the Celtics? We'll tell you in moments. And Baker Mayfield feels disrespected in Cleveland. We'll tell you why one of our analysts says the Cleveland quarterback doesn't know how the NFL works. And while Derek Carr got paid, Lamar Jackson is playing the long game. What's the better strategy? We'll get to that and a lot more as we say welcome to Get Up to You, presented by IHOP. So great that you could join us this morning. I'm Ryan Smith in for Mike Greenberg. Got a great show for you today. Diana Russini, Tim Legler with us, ready to talk some football and some basketball. Also joining us too, Lewis Riddick, Damian Woody, Brian Windhorst getting up with us too. And that makes a lot of sense because we're starting with the blowout of the night. And it's from the NBA. Hornets, Hawks facing each other in a play-in game. Winner faces the Cavs. Winner takes all in this one. First quarter, game tied at 10. Trae Young, Clint Capella with the slam. Atlanta fired up early, Tim.
Yeah, and if I asked you 2 weeks ago who played in the Eastern Conference Finals last year, I don't know if you would have remembered it was the Hawks. This is a team that's used to these pressure situations. Trae Young was picking them apart early with his passing.
Gallo going at it there. Hawks up big after the second, and then watch Young right here. Four on him, gets it right into DeAndre Hunter.
Unreal vision. He is so patient with the late find, and again, right here, gets the switch, gets the mismatch, finally gets a three-pointer to go. You see the relief on Trae Young to start to pull away.
Hawks up by 26 after three quarters. Now watch this little sequence right here. Miles Bridges loses the ball. Young dives for it, gets it, finds DeAndre Hunter, goes up, and he gets fouled and gets the bucket after a goaltending call. Now Bridges, not happy about that. Look at him, charging the refs, gets ejected, has to be held back at one point. I mean, this got a little bit nuts. Hawks, though. And watch this. This was the moment everybody's talking about. He throws the mouthpiece. It ends up hitting a fan. He ends up apologizing later, but Atlanta wins big, 132-103. Now, the Hawks survive to play another day, and now they're going to face the Cavs on Friday with the right to make the bracket and play top-seeded Miami Heat. So that gets interesting. The Brooklyn Nets already won their play-in game on Tuesday, and they officially will play the Celtics starting in Boston on Sunday. So let's bring back Legs and bring in Wendy as well. And Wendy, first, I got to get to this. What is the very latest you're hearing on Ben Simmons? You just got some news on that.
You know, Ryan, I am told that Ben Simmons is targeting games 4, 5, or 6 for making his Brooklyn Nets debut. I mean, I got to say that I was taken aback by being told that information. And my response was, is he even playing 5-on-5 yet? And the answer to that is no, but the hope is by the end of the week, he can ramp up to that. So that is still some time. We're still talking about over 7 days. It's a big ask, but I have to say that really for 7, 8 weeks now, I've heard nothing but pessimism on the Ben Simmons front, and that has switched dramatically in the last few days. So, I mean, right now I would say it. I have to report that it is possible we will see Ben Simmons in this series against the Celtics.
Unbelievable. I just want to say for it, that is huge news. Keep in mind, he hasn't taken the court in almost a year. We remember what happened last year in Philly when he did take the court, and now he could be back for game 4 on a team he hasn't even played with yet. So, Legs, is it realistic to expect that Simmons might be a factor in
this
series?
Well, first, I love what Wendy said, like 7, 8 weeks of pessimism, and all of a sudden now he might play. And I wonder if that has something to do with the fact that they're in the opposite bracket from Philadelphia now. I'm just saying, Wendy, it might be a little bit of a relief to Ben Simmons. But here's the thing. Will it be a factor? Definitely, because you're talking about a guy at 6'10" with lateral quickness, great length. You've got to defend guys like Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, and who knows, down the road, a Giannis Antetokounmpo, a Chris Middleton. So, yeah, factor. Enough to sway the series? I don't think so, because here's the thing. He's not going to be much of a factor offensively at all. He is a playmaker, and he can create some pace. But for the most part, when a guy hasn't played in a year and he's really a non-shooter as it is, I don't think he's got a big role in their offense. If I'm Boston, if I'm Ime Udoka, I'm seriously considering if he steps on the floor at some point, I'm sending that guy to the line every single chance I get to see where he is at with that part of his game after a 10-month layoff from basketball. It could disrupt, actually, what the Nets do offensively. But there's no doubt, if you can use him for 15 minutes to guard elite-level wing scorers, yeah, he's going to have a factor in this series. There's no question in my mind. I just don't know if it's going to be enough of a factor.
But you just said it. His job would be to guard elite-level scorers, right? Hadn't played in almost a year. We remember what happened last year. We remember the mental health issues. Windy, this is what this makes me think. He hasn't played in nearly a year. And so if he doesn't guard that talent well and Tatum goes off for 40, have the Nets been then setting him up to fail?
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code PARLAY and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code PARLAY. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
You know, I think the Nets kind of know that they're not going to have their best this year anyway. I think this trade was made with next year in mind. And if you've watched the Nets since Kyrie Irving has returned to be a full-time player, what we've basically seen is unrelenting offense and periods of total absent-minded defense. And that is really what is holding me and others back from honestly believing they can win three series. So if you enter Ben Simmons in that mix and he can plug that hole for 10, 12, 14 minutes and help them get through those stretches of bad defense, they have the formula for what could be a championship team. But you know, he has only worn the Nets jersey for picture day. He has never even worn it for any sort of playing. So it's very hard for me to make an honest assessment of what we could see here.
Coming in possibly at a high stakes moment. And just to say it again, Windy reporting that Ben Simmons could make his debut as early as game 4 in this Celtics series. Unbelievable, the NBA right now. All right, guys, we're going to talk a lot more about this as we go, but I want to get to the NFL where Baker Mayfield has broken his silence for the first time since the Browns traded for Deshaun Watson. Mayfield spoke on the YNK podcast on his strained relationship with the team. Take a listen to what he had to say.
I feel disrespected, 100%, because I was told one thing and they completely did another. When I wasn't performing on the field, that's when it really started going downhill. Then when it started hindering my play, and that's when I started losing my own self-confidence and just losing myself. This past year was rough. I would love to show up to somebody's cubicle and just boo the shit out of them. And see, and watch them crumble.
Do you have any idea where you're going to land?
Oh, man. If this would have been about a week and a half ago, I would have said Indianapolis. Seattle, I mean, probably be the most likely option. Mm-hmm. But even then, I'm ready for the next chapter.
Okay, first of all, I want to tell everybody at home, the dog is just fine. He's okay. You saw him spinning around on the couch and then he stopped. I was legitimately worried. But Woody, I also, if I'm a Cleveland Browns fan, I have to be worried about Baker's words. And if you're a Baker fan, you have to wonder, what do you make of what he's saying about how he feels disrespected by the Browns?
Well, listen, first of all, let me say the fact that I think Baker lacks some self-awareness here. The fact that, you know, you're in a situation where Deshaun Watson has been acquired by the Cleveland Browns. There's so much uncertainty about your situation. You go on a podcast and you vent all this stuff in the podcast. It just lacks self-awareness as far as Baker Mayfield is concerned. But beyond that, I will say this. I think Baker Mayfield doesn't understand the business of football. When you come into this league, 9 times out of 10, they're looking to replace you right off the bat. And any former player can speak to this. Lewis can speak to this as well. Like, they're always looking to upgrade from you. And Baker even talked about it in the podcast, how he had, you know, he was up and down. Well, guess what? If the Cleveland Browns feel like they can find a more viable option, another player that can take them over the top, they're going to do that. So I don't understand why he would feel like the Cleveland Browns wouldn't do something like that.
Okay. I mean, maybe he thought that he was the number one pick and he'd be insulated from some of that. But, Lewis, what do you make of these comments and how Cleveland has handled the situation?
Look, I think I have an understanding of why Baker is saying what he's saying, and I don't necessarily disagree with him. And I think that's because this. He knows that last year his performance was severely hindered by his non-throwing shoulder injury, by the harness he was wearing. We talked to him last year when we did their games in Pittsburgh, and how it really did make him miss some throws that you sat there and you're going, what the heck is he doing? But considering the fact that he couldn't rotate through on his throws, he couldn't throw the football accurately, and he was basically a walking mass unit in and of itself, you know, for a large part of the season, there was no way that his performance was going to be what it needed to be in order for them to feel good heading into 2022. There was just no way. He should have probably shut it down, got his body taken care of, and then look forward to 2022. The thing that I think he's talking about is this. When you play that way, if a team is sitting there saying, hey, look, we know that you're hurt. We're not going to hold it against you. You give us our best chance to win. We want you to still go out there and try to play. And then turn around and go, hey, you weren't good enough. You weren't quite good enough. Your play fell off a cliff. We're going to look to try and get somebody else. That's the kind of disrespect he's talking about. That's the kind of thing that wouldn't surprise me at all that Cleveland did, because look at what they did. Now, look, I understand that Deshaun Watson, when we're just talking about the player on the field when we last saw him, is a better quarterback than Baker Mayfield and can do more things than Baker Mayfield can. But when you take in the context, the contract that they gave Deshaun, given the uncertainty surrounding his ultimate availability, would it really shock you if they did something that really just wasn't on the level with Baker as far as being truthful about what his situation would be heading into 2022? No, it wouldn't shock you at all, and it shouldn't shock you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Dinah, what's the market for Baker at this point?
Well, at this point right now, he's owed about, we'll say, roughly $19 million guaranteed. So the Cleveland Browns are having a really hard time finding a team that wants to pay that salary. So at this point right now, there is no market. Do I think that's going to change over the next few weeks? Yes, but I do think Cleveland is going to probably be forced to meet halfway on this and maybe pick up some of that money. But I can tell you right now, I know Baker mentioned the Seattle Seahawks. From the conversations I had there, that doesn't seem to be the plan at this point right now.
Okay, Woody, real quick, do you think Baker's going to start this year?
No, he's not going to be handed a starting job. He might start because of some type of injury, but where is it going to go to start right now? It's just hard to really wrap your mind around that.
How the mighty have fallen. And I'm sure he's feeling a little bit of that, but I have to imagine that what he's saying in these interviews, maybe he's hurting his own value because everybody's listening. So coming up, we're going to talk a lot more about this, but I want to tell you what's coming up. Aaron Rodgers got his money. So did Derek Carr now. Is the Brinks truck going to stop backing up for NFL quarterbacks anytime soon? And is it good for the game? We'll answer that question. And for a guy who struggled in the postseason in his career, James Harden seems pretty chill heading into his series against the Raptors. Should he be? We'll talk about that and a lot more when Get Up comes back. Get Up is presented by IHOP. Join the new rewards program today and start earning free food. Well, parents, if you want your kids to be rich, tell them to be quarterbacks. NFL teams have been dishing out the big bucks for quarterbacks this offseason. Aaron Rodgers got a new contract worth over $150 million at the time. That was the most guaranteed money in a single contract ever. Well, that was until the Browns traded for Deshaun Watson from the Texans. Cleveland gave him $230 million. All of it fully guaranteed, a new NFL record. And then just yesterday, the Raiders passed the big bucks over to Derek Carr. 3 years, over $120 million. Carr is now the second longest tenured quarterback with one team in the NFL right now. behind Aaron Rodgers. All right, so let's talk about this big quarterback money. Diana, yeah. I'll start with Derek Carr first. What more do we know about this extension?
Yeah, you see the number, or at least you hear the number there that you just read, and you think, oh, that's so big. But when you really take a deep dive into it, it's really just a small bump in salary for this year. Huh. And it actually gives the Raiders some wiggle room to get out of this. It's structured in a way, whereas, you know, after this year, if they want to move on, they possibly could, right?
Really?
Yep, that's the way that deal is done. But we know that Derek Carr certainly wants to be a Raider for a very long time, as he says it's either play for the Raiders or go golfing. And he's obviously sticking with the Raiders here. And we'll see if Josh McDaniels wants to stick with the quarterback that I think at this point, he's proved he believes in.
But that is sneaky huge news, because when you look at the $120 million, you say, wow, he got paid.
Yeah.
They are committed to this guy, but they can actually get out of it.
Yeah, there's definitely some movement there. And you see this with a lot of different contracts, but this one specifically here, compared to a lot of quarterbacks mm-hmm. where you're seeing, like we saw Cleveland Browns paying Deshaun Watson all that guaranteed money. They're not going to move on from him because of all that money.
Right.
Here, they possibly could if they see after the season he's not good enough for them.
And not saying they would, because he's been very good. But, Lewis, I think you look at this and you wonder, the Raiders are about making it to the Super Bowl. Is Derek Carr the quarterback to bring them there? Can he do it?
Yeah, he can, as long as the rest of the football team, you know, does what it needs to do as well. Look, I think Derek Carr, you know, when you look at all of the real important metrics as far as gauging high-level quarterback play, is going to be a guy who's going to rank in your top 10 to 12 quarterbacks in the NFL, and I think that's good enough in order for you to get there. We know what the other important data metrics are that really lead to sustained success and having the highest level success for NFL teams. Turnover differential, least penalized football team, good in 2-minute situations, all those types of things. So what I'm saying is this, it's not just going to be on him. He isn't the kind of quarterback that's going to make up for a football team that wouldn't be good in all those areas that I just mentioned. But I think the fact that this team now, especially on the perimeter, has a very good chance to be one of the very best in the NFL with the addition of Devontae Adams, I think really what the Raiders' fortunes will hinge on is this offensive line. Whether or not it can be a top 10, top 15 offensive line, which it was not a year ago.
You make an outstanding point. That's so important to this team. But, Woody, we still look at quarterbacks and we put all of the praise on them when the team does well, and we put all the blame on them when they don't. So what do you think about Derek Carr and his ability to lead this team to the promised land?
Yeah, listen, I think we throw around the term franchise quarterback too loosely in the National Football League, but I do believe Derek Carr is a franchise quarterback. Mm. I mean, me personally, I was really impressed how Derek Carr was, all the turmoil that was going on with the Las Vegas Raiders last year and how he was able to lead and help navigate that team into the postseason speaks volumes not only about the character but about the play of Derek Carr on the field last year. You know, this is a Raiders team in the Derek Carr era has been dead last in scoring defense. I think if the Raiders can continue to build, they got the weapons on offense, they can continue to build on the defensive side of football, there's no question in my mind that Derek Carr is definitely talented enough to lead that team to a Super Bowl.
Yeah, I don't think we can stress enough what this team went through last year. I covered the Raiders plenty of times last season. And when you talk to his teammates about the type of leader he is, it's almost overwhelming how much they play for Derek Carr. He has this ability to connect with all different types of players. And the way he was able to carry that team, also stand in front of the media as often as he did, to have really uncomfortable conversations where all eyes were on him, and he just seemed to always have the right answer, the right perspective. The mental side of it for Derek Carr, that's a check. That's a check plus for him. But now with the weapons he has, and now with what Josh McDaniels can do in terms of this offense, I think we're going to see a new, reinvigorated Derek Carr on top of all the great things that we've seen from him last season. I think it's going to all come together this year. And, yeah, will we see him win his first postseason game? I think this is the year we see him do that.
Okay, we'll see what happens. We're going to talk about this and quarterbacks a lot more as we come up. But let's talk about this. Here's the next UFC fight night Saturday from the Apex in Las Vegas with our welterweight main event. The prelims start at 5:30 Eastern, 2:30 Pacific on ESPN+, followed by the main card at 8:30 Eastern, 5:30 Pacific on ESPN. And to get ESPN+, go to ESPNplus.com or download the ESPN app. Every April 15th is a special day in baseball, but this year it's the 75th anniversary of Jackie Robinson shattering the color barrier and setting the stage for momentous change in society. Today, an all-time great in tennis who was 3 years old when Robinson debuted for the Brooklyn Dodgers shares how he has inspired her through her lifelong battles for women's rights and equality for all. Part of our series, Black History Always.
In my household, because my dad's such a sports nut, he started talking about Jackie Robinson to me as early as I can remember. A few years later in the 50s, I started to watch television and realized that black children could not go to school in the South with white children, and I didn't understand that. And so what my dad would explain is that Jackie Robinson's trying to break down those barriers so that everybody will be included. I was very conditioned to thinking about inclusion. When I was 12, I had my epiphany at the Los Angeles Tennis Club. I just played tennis for a year, and I started to realize everybody who played was white that I had seen up to this time in my youth. And so I promised myself that day that I'd fight for equality the rest of my life.
Live from the Astrodome in Houston, Texas, the tennis battle of the sexes, Billie Jean King versus Bobby Riggs.
I'm ready to play, and I'm going to try to win for all the guys around the world who feel as I do, that the male is king, the male is supreme.
The women's movement is really making a better life for more people other than just women, and I feel very strongly about it from that point of view.
September 20th, 1973, I played against Bobby Riggs, who had been the former number one player in the world. I thought about Title IX. I've got to win because I want Title IX to stay strong. I thought about Jackie. I thought about a lot of people. I thought about Althea Gibson. I thought about Martin Luther King Jr. Those are the people you do think about before you play a match like I played against Bobby Riggs.
It is over. Let's watch Bobby Riggs.
I mean, I know that I only have one moment in time that I have to win that match. 90 million people saw it throughout the world, so it was a big influencer to that match. The women's movement was at its height, the second wave, and I wanted that to be carried forward. I only had one night, and I knew how crucial it was. Jackie, every day he'd wake up, he has to think, whew, boy, he's got to suck it up every morning and get ready for this onslaught of racism. I want to wake up with fire in the belly every morning and get ready for the day. And I think Jackie Robinson's legacy, his memory, is still very much alive. It's not about the past. It's about now and the future because of what Jackie Robinson stands for. To stand up, to be included, to be treated fairly, like every human being wants to be.
Billie Jean King won 39 major titles, 12 in singles, as she led the battle for women to receive equal prize money in tennis. For our interview, she said she wore Dodger blue to honor Jackie Robinson and because she's part owner of the team. Please join us again tomorrow as we conclude our countdown to April 15th with another firsthand reflection in our series, Jackie to Me. Coming up, Zion wowed the crowd pregame last night. Is this a sign that we may see the Pelican star in a game very soon? Talk about that and more when we come back.
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
You're watching Get Up, presented by IHOP. How about a little eye candy to get you started today? This was a sight for sore eyes before the Pelicans win over the Spurs last night. Zion, throwing it down, big man. And you know, Wendy, every time I see Zion dunk, the first thing I always look for is what happens afterwards. Like, how's he walking? What's the latest on Zion?
So the official position, Ryan, is that he remains out indefinitely. He will not play against the Clippers in the play-in game tomorrow. He will not play against the Suns if they advance into the playoffs. That said, he is playing five-on-five scrimmages, which means he's ahead of Ben Simmons in this regard. And if there's a possibility that the Pelicans go deep into a playoff series or somehow advance and pull an upset, I guess I wouldn't rule out it out totally. But I think right now we're going to have to settle for watching those pregame dunks.
Those dunks are so impressive, though, Lex. If we can put it up again, let's do it, because, I mean, that's just a sight to see. What do you make of seeing that? Look at this. I mean, the agility looks great.
Any dunk's impressive to me, Ryan. I make my living a different way. So that's, yes. Yeah, So that's for me. This is special. You see a guy, you know, it's built like this. The league's never seen anything quite like Zion Williamson, and the league needs him. And all this does is tantalize us with what could have been this year. But look, it's obviously great to see him at least moving around. I mean, we went months this year without a sighting of Zion Williamson, so this is great news. Now, as far as him playing this year, I think Wendy hit on it. I think that would be a massive mistake to inject him into any series in which he's been off this long, and now it's the most physical, it's the most intense. He's been gone. What are you doing? Because even if you put him in a series, let's say, for a couple games against Phoenix, they're not going to win that series.
But even if it's 2-2 or 3-3 and you're right up against it?
Well, I guess maybe you're being more optimistic about even getting to that point than I am. I mean, the Suns, to me, are head and shoulders the best team in the NBA. So I don't think you're winning that series. So what would you really be doing? You'd be seeing Zion Williamson for two or three games and then shutting him down again for months. So I just think you're at this point, it's got to be, let's look toward next year and let's look toward keeping Zion Williamson on the court so we have him for an entire season. Now, what New Orleans did last night was impressive. I think they've got a great chance to beat the Clippers and get into the postseason. That would set the tone going forward with C.J. McCollum, Brandon Ingram. You add Zion Williamson to the mix healthy, that is a team that is absolutely relevant and in the mix in the Western Conference next year.
Yeah, future looking bright for them. Now, speaking of, so Zion probably indefinitely out for the playoffs, Wendy's saying, but let's talk about a player in the playoffs in Philly. The Sixers preparing for their first round series against Toronto. All eyes are on James Harden. He faces enormous pressure after coming over after that midseason trade. Here's what Harden had to say about that pressure, when talking to the Publication Complex. I don't feel any pressure. I don't feel any of that. For me, it's going out there and playing my game and trying to help my team win. Okay, this took me aback. And look, on the one hand, Legs, I think you could look at this and say, you know, it's great. He's a leader. He's confident. He's calm. Maybe that's what we want in our leaders. On the other hand, what?
Yeah. You're asking me? I think it's disingenuous. Listen. And the second half of that statement is true. For me, it's just about going out, playing my game, doing my thing. He's right, but it's doing that at a high level and helping a guy who could be the MVP of the league, you know, not let him down. Right? And you brought him in here for one specific reason, to win a championship. And you held out two-thirds of the year for this exact player, if you're Daryl Morey, to come in. He's not playing great coming into this. Now, for him to say, I have nothing to prove and I feel no pressure, I just don't think he's being honest. He's trying to put forth a front to other people in the media in particular, and the fan base, to say, hey, listen, nothing you say about me, write about me, is going to get inside my head. I just want you to know I'm comfortable in my own skin. The truth is, though, we all know this. He's going to be alone with his own thoughts. He's going to feel pressure in that market, under these circumstances, what he was brought there to do. He absolutely is going to feel it, and he absolutely has something to prove. In fact, I'll say he has more to prove than any other player in the postseason coming into it. And he knows that. He's just trying to put forth that front of confidence and also lack of regard for what other people think. Like, you're not going to bother me. I'm good no matter what happens. The truth is, though, he will be judged harshly if he does not play well and they lose this series.
Yeah, he may have 270 million reasons to prove something. But, Wendy, what's your reaction to what James Harden's saying?
I think he's being 100% honest, and I think he's right.
Oh.
Legs, you're speaking from somebody who's worried about accountability. James Harden is not. He played one of the most disappointing playoff series I can remember 3 years ago, blamed Chris Paul. Rockets sent Chris Paul packing. Last 2 years, wasn't happy with the situation, quit on his team, got traded. No matter what he does in this postseason, He's getting that $200 million contract. I mean, you're talking about it from a personal accountability standpoint. I haven't seen that from Harden, and I've only seen him be rewarded and get everything he wants. So he plays well in the postseason, and the Sixers advance, great. He plays poorly. I'll let you know on July 1st when I'm ready to come in and sign my contract. That's how his life has been. Wow. Why would it be any different?
Well, I hear you. So, I mean, that's really talking about a guy that may be immune from feeling that because he's secure. He's got his money. He's going to be in the Hall of Fame. He's got an MVP. I hear you, Wendy. But here's the thing. He's never experienced scrutiny like he's going to experience in this market. There's nothing like what that fan base and what that media are going to do to James Harden. He never got that in Houston. He didn't get it in Brooklyn. This is a completely different level of expectation and accountability. And he's going to feel that every single day when he's in public, every time he takes the floor going forward, he's going to feel it. And that's why I think there is more pressure in this situation, even for a guy that might not care. Like, he's just going to get his numbers, got his MVP, I win, I get my money. If that's how we're going to portray James Harden, okay, but not in this market. They're not going to allow you to just go and be happy and spend your money. That's just not what Philadelphia's going to do to
him. No way. You played there, you played well, and they love you for it. But if you don't play well in Philly, they never let you forget it every minute of every day. Guys, we'll come back and talk about this a little bit more. Because this one we can't let go, but we got to talk about the NFL draft. 2 weeks away. Lewis, you're going to be at the draft. I tell you, look, when you look at some of the players out there, Kayvon Thibodeau, others getting ready to make a big splash. And Lewis, let's talk about Kayvon Thibodeau. Where will he end up?
A great question. I mean, it's definitely one of the sticking points for me early on in the top five picks of this draft. Does he go as high as four to the Jets? I think what's really going to be important, I think, for me is exactly the team that he goes to in terms of how are they going to use him, how are they going to coach him, what are they going to demand of him. If he goes to the Jets and he plays for Robert Saleh, I can tell you this. They coach their defensive line in a way that anybody who does not really, who is not conditioned to give 100% all the time, you will have a hard time playing for Robert Saleh. And I think that's exactly what Kayvon needs, because when he is dialed in and he looks like he did when he was a freshman, this guy is unblockable. This past year, not quite the same. So I think that's going to be important for him to go to the right place. Secondly, Ahmad Gardner, where does he ultimately wind up? Is it really possible that he could go as high as number two to the Detroit Lions, who just a couple years ago drafted Jeff Okuda in the top 10? Look, for me, I think Ahmad is one of those guys who's a can't-miss type of prospect, meaning this, he is a true in the modern day NFL, and even in the NFL of 20 years ago, a true shutdown corner with his 6'2 size, 190 pounds, 4'4'1, 40 yard dash. He's the type of guy who can match up against any kind of wide receiver in the NFL and really excel. And then lastly, how high do the quarterbacks ultimately go? How high does Kenny Pickett and Malik Willis go? Which one of these guys comes off the board first? And could somebody like Malik Willis, as has been talked about, go as high as number two to the Lions, although I can't see it? Or does the sixth spot there with Carolina, is that where the conversation really starts with these quarterbacks? And then, is it Kenny Pickett? Does he utilize his relationship that he had coming out of high school with Matt Rhule, you know, committing to Temple originally before then transferring to and going to Pitt? Or is it Malik Willis who ultimately is the first quarterback taken? Ultimately, I think in the end, both quarterbacks will be drafted higher than normally these two quarterbacks would go in a quarterback-heavy draft. But I think both of these players, especially Kenny Pickett, is a guy who can come in and really help your football team right away. So I think these are three storylines, though, that I'll be watching in 2 weeks.
Okay, it's going to be interesting. And we bring in ESPN NFL draft analyst Matt Miller. He's also getting up with us to talk about these quarterbacks. And Matt Lewis was just talking about it. The prospect of overdrafting quarterbacks. What do you think about it in this particular draft where they're not being valued in the same way that they have been in years past? There's not that true superstar.
Oh, yeah, overdrafting will happen. Lewis is spot on here. And this is a conversation I think a lot of us have had over the last month of where do I have this player ranked versus where will he be drafted? I only have one quarterback in my top 32. That's Malik Willis, and he's at number 21 overall. He will not be drafted at 21 overall, guys. He'll likely be a top 10 pick. Kenny Pickett, similarly, early round two grade, will probably be drafted in the top 15 picks. I think one thing that is very interesting is what will happen with trades. Does a team like the New Orleans Saints come up with those two picks in the middle of the round? Or do we see a team like Carolina's move back from six overall to try to recoup some of the draft capital they lost, making moves for guys like Sam Darnold last year? So right now is, I think, the most difficult it has been in a long time to try to accurately predict where these quarterbacks are actually going to land this year.
And Matt, because we don't know all these guys so well, give me a sense of a comp for someone like Malik Willis, who some people say might be the first quarterback selected.
Yeah, I think he will be and should be the first quarterback selected. I look at him and see Jalen Hurts, someone who can impact the game immediately as a runner, as a thrower. I think Jalen was a little more accurate on underneath passes. I think Malik has a stronger arm and he's a better vertical thrower. But that's the type of impact he could have, the type of passer you're going to get where you want to work in some RPO. You want to give him some half-field reads. You also want to make sure he's free to do what he does best, and that is impact the game as a runner. We didn't get a 40-yard time on Malik. It would have been electric if we had. But I do think if he's a rookie quarterback, you're probably giving him a certain package, not necessarily unleashing him as a starter.
Okay. You know, they say the talent is there. We'll see how it ends up playing out when he reaches the NFL. Thanks, guys. And by the way, speaking of young quarterbacks, Tua Tagovailoa, he's got his detractors, but not one longtime teammate. Why? Jalen Waddle says we're all tripping when we criticize the Dolphins quarterback.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use the code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only, not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use the code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Back with you on Get Up. And look, over the past week, Broncos' new quarterback Russell Wilson's been everywhere, all over Denver. Look at him. He's at the Nuggets game, throwing footballs. That looks nice. And then he's throwing out the first pitch at the Rockies game Friday night. But what really is going to matter for him is what happens on the football field. Yesterday, Greeny asked Kimberly Martin if Wilson had something to prove in this stop in Denver.
No question, yes. 100%. Because think about it, he's won a Super Bowl. But what do we think about when we think about that Seattle Super Bowl? We think about the Legion of Boom, and we think about Marshawn Lynch. Mm-hmm. We don't think about Russell, and he's aware of how he's viewed and how he's talked about. The vibes were off in Seattle. Now the juice, it's on a different level in Denver.
It's an important point. And Lewis, as we were looking at this and thinking about it, I wonder what you think about how much pressure is on Wilson to turn this Denver team around and really lead them deep into the playoffs.
Well, I think there's a tremendous amount of pressure on him because, look, this is what he wanted. Look, the smoke signals were being sent up a long time ago that he wanted out of Seattle, and there were certain teams that he wanted to go to because maybe he felt as though his talents weren't really being utilized in Seattle's offense because philosophically they wanted to be a run-first football team, and he wanted to be a guy who was put on the shoulders of the quarterback because he felt he had those skills that deserved it being put on his shoulders. Well, it's going to be on his shoulders now in a division where the offensive – let's just start from a team perspective first, where there's an offensive line that he's going to be playing behind that is still a work in progress. He has some phenomenal weapons out on the perimeter in terms of size and speed, you know, with Cortland Sutton and guys like Jerry Jeudy, KJ Hamler, Tim Patrick. I mean, those are bona fide perimeter weapons. Javonte Williams is a bona fide runner. But he's going, again, he's going to be in a division as well where he's going to be judged against other quarterbacks that are going to be putting that ball up in the air and scoring points at a very high clip. For him, he needs to get this football team into the playoffs this year. He needs to be the catalyst for why this football team gets put into the playoffs, because I think they felt as though that's really the one thing that they needed, and they felt as though he would be the guy that could help get them there. So, look, for him and Nathaniel Hackett, look, there's going to be a big, big bullseye on this football team, and deservedly so. So we'll see how this plays out, but there's no doubt that there is a lot of pressure on Russ for 2022. No question about it.
So needs to get him to the playoffs and needs to be the catalyst to get him there. Diana, what do you think?
I don't have the charm of my girl Kimberly Martin because, you know, it's no question no in terms of pressure.
Really?
I look at it as this, and you know, Lou just pointed out, first-year head coach and Russell Wilson, do we expect them to really just come together and have this perfect marriage out of the gate? Look, the AFC West is really – you do? Wow. I think you're asking a lot of them. Oh, man, I didn't know that you set the bar so darn high around here.
Oh, yeah.
But look, I look at it this way. You know, the AFC West is already a really difficult place to win. If they can just win that, yeah, I think that's going to be fantastic. But when we, I love when we have these conversations of pressure. Let's define pressure. What is pressure? Russell Wilson, I think, can manage that. I just think we got to allow a little bit of cushion, a little transition here before we immediately anoint them and say, they've got to go deep in the playoffs.
Woody's, I see you, Woody. What do you think?
Hey, listen. There's a lot of pressure here. I think Kimberly Martin hit it right on the head, number one, as far as, you know, the Legion of Boom, and that's what kind of what people remember about that Super Bowl team up in Seattle. But I'm also going to say this. The last time a prominent quarterback went to Denver with who? Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning won a Super Bowl with the Denver Broncos, went to two. And so, like Lewis talked about, Russell Wilson chose the Denver Broncos. This was not a coincidence. He chose the Denver Broncos because he wanted to be put in a position why this is an organization, the reason why they ultimately win is because of him. And so if you don't fulfill on that promise, and it starts right now, no one in Denver is looking for an excuse about a transition, new coach, new quarterback. No.
Yeah.
The Denver Broncos is about winning Super Bowls right now. So yes, absolutely. And I think there's questions about, is Russell Wilson an elite quarterback right now? I think that question needs to be answered as well.
Here's Damian coming in playing producer too. He plays the piano. He's an analyst.
Well, I just want to say, Damian, are you saying basically it's Super Bowl or bust for Russ?
Ryan, if you're Denver, why do you make that move? Like, you don't make that move to compete in the AFC. You make that move because you feel like, as an organization, that you can win a Super Bowl this year.
Go ahead, Lou, real quick.
You know what? I'll tell you what. At the very least, they better get a wild card spot, which I think is going to be tough for them also, okay? Because the AFC is just stocked. They're not just in the West, but they better get a wild card spot. And look, we can change the word from, is there pressure on Russell Wilson? No, there's not pressure. Okay, let's just put it this way. There are high expectations because of the fact that he picked them. He is a guy who wanted to change. He wanted to get away from Seattle. He wanted to be in an offense that really made him the focal point. So with that comes expectation and comes responsibility. So you better play at your very best, and you better be the reason why this football team looks differently offensively as opposed to, you know, being just another piece in the puzzle. You better be the reason. So we'll see. Because, look, there's no question. Look, the expectations are very, very high in Denver right now because they feel as though they already have a contending caliber defense. It's all on number three now. And that's how he would want it. And that's how we should expect it, and we should hold him to that standard. We shouldn't give him a pass. We shouldn't give him any cushion. We don't give any of the other top quarterbacks cushion. When they don't play well and their teams don't perform, what do? We hammer them on every show. We hammer them. You're not playing good enough. You're not playing good enough. It's the same thing with Russ this year. And that's okay, because that's the way it's supposed to be.
You know, and you know what? I said we would move on, but this discussion is too good. I got to stay with it. You know what, Diana? For years, the discussion is – what have we been saying about Russ all these years? Let Russ cook. Yep. Let Russ cook. Everybody's got to let Russ cook. Now he's on a team where they're letting him cook.
Yeah.
Aren't the expectations you got to make it deep?
Of course, but we do this so quickly. We think because a team makes a move like this, they must win now. Yeah, of course, in a dream scenario, that's why they made this move.
It's the NFL.
It is, and I get that. I just think we need to have just slightly more patience, just a little bit more patience to let Russ adjust. Look, he looks energized. He seems happy as heck. He's selling his house in Seattle already. The pages have turned in the chapter of being a Seahawk. He's all in on Denver. And from everything that I've learned from talking to people in the organization, he has done an incredible job getting to know the staff, the team. He came prepared. He did his homework on the Denver Broncos before he signed with them. He knew them just as much as they knew him. Mm-hmm. So, look, he's setting this up. He wants to have success. Of course he does. I just think we got to give it a beat. Mm-hmm. We got to give it a beat.
Lou, go ahead.
No, look, I mean, that's great that he's doing all that stuff. I mean, I love all that. I love it. But this is a bottom line business. And look, teams go worst to first all the time. Teams make 180-degree turns in the NFL now. And we all know that the timeline has been condensed dramatically when we're talking about teams turning around their fortunes. We know that. They're not bringing in some young hotshot quarterback here who doesn't have a resume in the NFL as far as playing at a high level. It's Russell freaking Wilson. It's a guy who everyone has had their shot at saying, let Russ cook. Everyone has.
So, look, I understand that he's going in there with a new coach. And he's going in there with new players. He has to develop chemistry with them. That's great. Every team has to do that. Every single team has to do that. And when the games start, he better be winning those games. He better be beating the Raiders. He better be beating the Chiefs. He better be beating the Chargers. He better be out-dueling Justin Herbert. He better be out-dueling Patrick Mahomes, because that's what he was brought there for, and that's what he wanted. So now this is the challenge you wanted. Accept it. Let's see what you do with it.
And Dan, I think one thing you're saying is, can he actually do that, given the new situation, given everything? Damon, can he actually do that in this division, in this league?
Ryan, that's the question, right? I don't know if Russell's elite right now. Like, I think he's a very good quarterback, but I think there's questions about is he still an elite quarterback? I think it's a legitimate question. But listen, it still goes back to, if you're the Denver Broncos, you've been basically saying, without saying, that you need a quarterback. We have the roster ready. All we need is a quarterback. And you pull the trigger and make a trade for Russell Wilson. If that doesn't tell you that this team expects to compete for a Super Bowl, I don't know what else will.
Yeah, and let's not forget, he asked for this. He wanted to be in this position. He got it. And we'll see how it plays out.
He wanted the smoke. He got it.
Yep, and you know who's getting the smoke? Baker Mayfield. He says the Browns did him wrong this offseason. And one of my friends here today thinks he's flat out wrong. You'll hear why next.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.